the gifts of life, light, and second chances. Just some of the themes in our program today. I'm Jerry Kenny. This is WISO Weekend. And welcome to the program. Up first today, as with most schools, our fall Dayton Youth Radio class from Centerville High School was taught online in a virtual classroom. Today's feature is from a teenager who says the best holiday gift is the one that can't be found under a Christmas tree. Here's Youth Radio Project Manager Basim Blunt to introduce the story.
For the first 17 years of today's producer's life, he was known to the world as Aaron Stepp. That's his father's last name. Pretty common, right?
I'm Aaron. I'm a senior at Centerville. I love hanging out with my friends. I have goals for my life. I have great ambitions. And to say it lightly, I'm a sneakerhead. My favorite sneaker of all time is the Air Jordan 1 Chicago. I live with my mom, Diane, and my sister, Abigail. I've lived with my mom and my sister my whole life. I have a memory that my mom and I share from when we moved from a not-so-good neighborhood in Dayton to Centerville. I remember one time in my old neighborhood, two guys stopped in the middle of the street in front of our house and got into a fight while I was outside. I was really small at the time, so naturally, I ran and hid. Coming from that to Centerville was a really big step up. My story is about how I decided to change my last name, mainly because I no longer wish to have my father's last name attached to me anymore. My mom and my dad, Roy, have been split up for the majority of my life. I haven't seen my father since 2012. I don't really remember the last time I saw him. From what I remember, he had wrinkly skin, a receding hairline, and the blue eyes that I got. My father was the perfect representation of the stereotypical deadbeat dad. He'd always yell at my mom, and I'd wake up to him arguing with her in the middle of the night. He worked a dead-end job and did things that shouldn't be said on the radio. The only reason he wanted custody over me and my sister was so my mom would have to pay him child support. You get the picture. I turned 18 on August 31st. For me, turning 18 means the first step into adulthood. So this year, on my birthday, I told my mom that I'm going to change my last name to her last name.
That's why you had to wait till you're 18 years old, because it's a decision that... It's a personal decision that you all have to make.
Actually, this morning when I recorded my interview with my mother, she almost went into tears and told me it'd be an honor for me to take her last name. All right, Mom, so how do you feel about me changing my last name to your last name?
When you told me that you had been thinking about it and that you wanted to change your name, it's overwhelming. It made... You know, goosebumps go up my arms, and it made me feel honored. It's the fact that you acknowledge my lineage and who I came from, and then you also are acknowledging the fact that I've been by myself, and there's a whole lot of feelings behind that.
I did this story because it's going on right now. This is very recent. It's big. I don't want my person or my achievements to be attached to my father's last name.
I never wanted to have you guys feel all of the badness of a divorce and all the horrible things that were said and done to me. And for you to take that name, just an acknowledgement that I did okay, and that we're going to be okay, and you're going to be okay, and Abigail's going to be okay.
I'm sure it'll be weird for my friends to address me by a completely different name from what they're used to. My final thoughts are, Aaron Matlock sounds a whole lot cooler than Aaron Stepp. For Dayton Youth Radio at Centerville High School, this is Aaron Matlock.
That was A Christmas Story, written and produced by Aaron Matlock, a senior at Centerville High School. Special thanks to Aaron's mom, Diane, and Aaron's teacher, Tricia Raypock. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Basim Blunt.
Dayton Youth Radio is just one of the stories you'll hear today, created at the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WYSO. Well, COVID has inspired some creative approaches to making theater and doing it in safe, socially distanced ways. Turns out that radio drama can be done safely and still provide performance opportunities for young people. Perhaps we're entering the next golden age of radio drama? You might think so after hearing the work of the 7th and 8th grade classes at the Ridgewood School in Springfield. They wrote, performed, and produced the first annual Ridgewood School radio play thingy, as the students describe it. We think it's fun and are pleased to share it with you this holiday season.
Live from the Square Ballroom, high atop the Short Tower in stupendous Springfield, Ohio, America's champion city, it's the first annual Ridgewood School radio play thingy, brought to you by Raid Shadow Legends, because when you choose Raid, you're sure to be a legend. You betcha. And now, here's your tubular holiday host, Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, hey, Brayden! Wait a minute, is that something shiny over there? Go get it, go get it. Good boy, good boy. Ugh, he's gone. Whew. Anywho, live from the Channel 7 Ballroom, high atop the Chicken Tower in spectacular Springfield, Ohio, America's champion city, it's the first annual Ridgewood School Winter Bash, brought to you by Santa's Cookies. Because when you choose Santa's Cookies, you're sure to be on the nice list. You betcha. And now, here's your happy holiday host, Mahad Rizvi.
"'Twas the cough before Christmas, and throughout our home, all the tissues were dirty while we stared at our phones.
The children were held hostage in their isolated beds, while visions of PlayStations danced in their heads, mom in her face shield washing her hands, and the children were teasing their swollen lymph glands.
The pandemic was bad. It all happened so fast, and no one could say how long it might last. It's hard to stay calm. It's hard not to panic, especially when everyone's asymptomatic.
Then out on the lawn there arose such a clatter that I crawled from my bed to see what was the matter. As I ran to the window to add to my blues, I tore open the shutters and sneezed on my shoes.
The moon on the of the crestfallen snow gave a luster of recess to objects below, when what to my watering eyes should appear but a hospital bed pulled by 8 panting reindeer.
Now Harris, now Pence, now Kanye and Nancy, on Obama, on Donald, on Biden and Fauci, to the height of the charts, to the top of the polls, now run away, run away, run away all."
I flipped on the light switch, quite frightened, and then, faster than you can say hydroxychloroquine, I spied what I thought was a sinister lurker, but it turned out to be a heroic medical worker.
He was dressed in all scrubs from his head to his toes, and his clothes were all crawling with germs. Ew, gross! A bundle of tests he had given that day. "I'll tickle your brain, now be on your way."
He let out a sigh, and then brushed off some snow. Blowing his nose, knocked his mask akimbo. I ordered some toilet paper, but it never came. And he raged, and he shouted, "A bat was to blame.
The string of his mask he held tight in his teeth, and his glasses fogged up whenever he breathed. The whole of his face the mask now did not cover, and he yelled to the deer, "Stay 6 feet from each other!"
He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work, filled up a syringe, then he turned with a squirt, heading downstairs towards wheezing Aunt Rose, and giving a knock down the basement he goes.
"Instead of bringing 12 drummers drumming, I only brought 10, because that's the most the CDC says we can let in. As the other two drummers joined via Zoom, the medical worker snuck out of the room.
We sprang from our beds to our dogs gave a whistle, and out the door we flew like a heat-seeking missile. But I heard him shout out as he tossed off his mask, "Peace out, 2020, the vaccine's here at last."
You've been listening to a dramatization of the Ridgewood School Winter Bash, brought to you by Santa's Cookies. Thanks for listening, and see you next year. We now return you to our regularly scheduled programming. This is the Ridgewood Radio Network.
Seventh and eighth grade classes at Ridgewood School in Springfield. Thanks so much to Beth Dixon and Todd Spar for sending that radio drama our way. Well, we've passed the winter solstice, the shortest day of the year. Twilight begins just after 5 p.m., and by 6, it's dark. Throughout December, we experience only about 9 hours of daylight. Here's Culture Couch producer Susan Burns exploring the impact of light on two visual artists.
Qualities of light become especially noticeable in winter when we experience more darkness. I invited two artists to share how they see light during this season. We met via Zoom to chat in the blue glow of our computer screens.
I've always been attracted to the light that's generated in the Midwest.
Julie Renee Jones teaches photography at the University of Dayton. Her portraiture series called Umbra places subjects in settings of powerful light.
I prefer late summer and early fall light to any other light around the year, and specifically Ohio late summer, early fall light, because of its kind of balance between this, like the flatness that you get in the summer, and then this a little bit of intensity that comes as the days get shorter, and the angle of the earth, that it becomes a little bit more intense. And so that really creates that spotlight effect for me, the moments when the light seems almost too bright to be real.
Alice Pixel Young is an installation artist and teacher at the School for Creative and Performing Arts in Cincinnati.
Trained as a painter, moving from Washington, D.C. to Florida, and then to Western Pennsylvania and then Ohio, I was very, very struck by the light difference.
In her work, Alice projects light through objects on rotating platforms to make what she calls moving shadow drawings of natural and industrial landscapes.
I think that also in my work, shadows are very important, and it's very much about the light piercing voids, creating shadows. The length of shadows and the way that things happen, especially at this time of year, and because night is coming on so much earlier too, charges the space and charges the imagination with what can happen.
I was just going to say that this time of year, because of the intensity of the light, the shadows, I think, Alice, you were kind of alluding to this, is they become so much longer and so much deeper. So they do have this really wonderful dramatic quality. I actually am very interested and actively trying to make a picture that is about the shortness of the days in the winter. And it's about the impending shadow that happens at 4 o'clock. And how it really makes you feel disoriented.
That disorientation is related to circadian rhythms, our body clock that responds to light with feelings of wakeful energy or sleepiness. Some people even have feelings of depression, referred to as seasonal affective disorder. Both artists say the loss of light affects them, but they're also attracted to darkness.
Alice had mentioned how important shadow was in her work, as well as light. I see them as kind of married partners. There's something really alluring about the way that shadow falls on the human body and the human face, and how that creates mystery and ambiguity and a sense of the unknown.
I would say I spend a lot of time making and creating the devices that are going to ultimately become the shadows. And often people come into my installations and they're looking for what is causing the projection, or where is it coming from? But it's the shadow making that is by far the most important element. And I think that's, again, because of the way it creates a magical sense in the space. The space becomes much more memory-laden, much more psychological. It becomes no longer a space of sort of the moment of reality, but a space that we all kind of share universally, I think, something that sort of really pulls us back to childhood or beyond. I just think that idea of things going against the wall and sort of, you know, fading in, fading out, changing in scale, is just so primal to us as humans.
The interplay between light and darkness evokes an inherent physical response in us. It also fuels the human imagination. The arc of sun across the sky is perhaps the original narrative arc of the art of storytelling, practiced at night in the glow of firelight with a backdrop of flickering shadows. This is Susan Burns for WYSO.
Culture Couch is supported by WYSO leaders Frank Senna and Heather Bailey, who are proud to support storytelling that sparks curiosity, highlights creativity, and builds community. The corner of Salem and Superior Avenue in Northwest Dayton is looking a bit different these days, and people are excited. Jacqueline Moore Fala has lived in Dayton her whole life.
And I am just so thrilled of this light. It's just like a bright light on the corner.
That bright light is the Gem City Market. It's a cooperative supermarket opening this winter in an area where it can be difficult to find fresh groceries. But the benefits of the co-op go beyond providing healthy food options to residents. WYSO's Lila Goldstein reports.
Decked out in a hard hat and a highlighter yellow vest, General Manager Leah Behan Harris gives me a tour of the Gem City Market. It's in its final stages of construction.
Right now we're in the teaching kitchen. There's going to be 6 cooktops and stoves in here for teaching classes, for competition, for mentorship.
She shows me 2 exam rooms where a health clinic will operate, the loading dock where groceries will get delivered, and a community room next to the big front windows. She says the reason the market is there is for the community, and she wants customers to tell her about products or programs they want at the store.
You know, in communities like this, that are working class or predominantly African American, why sometimes when businesses come, maybe people don't feel the welcome piece. I think what we're trying to do is make this place right here inclusive for everybody.
Behan Harris grew up in Five Oaks, about 10 blocks down the road from the market. Her first job was at the food court at a Walmart on Salem Avenue that's since closed. She's built food service programs, worked as an executive chef, and served as farm manager on an organic farm. As she got older and businesses closed in the area, getting groceries in particular became a hassle.
And so I would have to go to the suburbs, or I'd have to go, hey, I visit my friend, I'm just going to pick up groceries. And it became more like a trip.
The experience she's describing is not unique. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, about 13% of the U.S. population lives in areas that are low income and have low access to food stores. And there's been a movement across the country to solve this problem by building supermarkets in those places. But living close to a grocery store doesn't always mean that healthy food is accessible.
If you live next to a grocery store, you can still not be able to afford the food there. And if you live far away, if you have enough money, of course you can afford to eat whatever you want.
Catherine Brinkley studies food policy at the University of California, Davis. She says diet-related health correlates more with income than proximity to a supermarket.
But what grocery stores do offer communities is oftentimes ATMs, pharmacies, job opportunity. They have ripple effects in the housing market.
And there are signs of revitalization happening where the market is being built. Dayton Mayor Nan Whaley says the Gem City Market has been galvanizing conversations about development along Salem Avenue.
It's like not only the fact that the community said, hey, we need a market, but that market is driving other people to look at investment in a place that hasn't been invested in a very long time.
She says doing development that doesn't make an area too expensive for current residents is tough work that she thinks the city is doing pretty well at.
So you do development and then you will price everybody that lives in the community out of the development. Or you never do development. Like, both are terrible options, right? So how you get the sweet spot is, I think, the strive of the city.
Gem City Market organizers think the cooperative model, where members are involved in decision-making, will help combat possible gentrification in the neighborhood. Since 2015, there have been many community meetings, local artists contributing to the design, and now virtual volunteer trainings. Co-op member Corrine Sanders spoke at a recent training on Zoom. She sees this as a new beginning for the community that will bring this part of Dayton alive again.
Because it's just like falling to the wayside and nobody was paying any attention to Dayton anymore. And years ago, we had a slogan of Dayton, the city beautiful. And it's far from that anymore.
She wants the Gem City Market to help people feel pride in their neighborhood. And Behan Harris says the project goes beyond opening a brick-and-mortar store in the area.
It's more than just a need of retail. It's a need of being heard. I think it's a need of being seen. I think the vulnerability of the community coming together to share their goals and to share their pain is what will make this project so successful.
And there's data to back this up. Research shows that community-driven stores like cooperatives opening in food deserts have more staying power than commercial retailers. And Behan Harris says she's excited just imagining what the community will bring. For WISO News, I'm Lila Goldstein.
West Dayton Stories is our series exploring the strength and resilience of Dayton's African-American community. Here's Jocelyn Robinson from the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices.
Storyteller and folklorist Amope Carter DeBoyku draws on the deep well of her Appalachian forebears in her professional life, but that heritage has also proven to be a source of solace and inspiration in these tough times. Here's her West Dayton Stories COVID commentary.
I had just started driving again after major surgery when Governor DeWine shut down the state. My immediate response was anger. Anger about quarantine, losing contracts and income, anger at the government for waiting until the wolf was at the door. Then the corona coaster hit, with continuous ups and downs of fear and despair. If I sat still, my body went to sleep. When awake, tears slid down my face without permission. I was a teapot boiling over. To stay depression, I reflected on how my ancestors had survived the travesties of being kidnapped, chained together without knowledge of destination, the indignities of African enslavement and indigenous displacement, and centuries of systemic racist policies in support of capitalism. Others arriving possibly penniless from some European settlement where owning land was an impossibility. As their legacy, the same desire to survive and thrive resided in me. My body and psyche began to reset and grab the opportunity to create the serene life my grandparents had. I got up before dawn, gave thanks for another day, drank more water, ate more fresh produce, and sat in the sunshine to absorb vitamin D, walked in pre-dawn meditative silence, felt the wind shift as the sun came up, listened to bird song. As I watched them busily building nests for a new generation, I was reminded that routine and tradition help keep us grounded in our purpose. I began to dream my new normal. My Appalachian ancestors taught me that working the earth could absorb anxiety, and I could help restore our agricultural heritage. So now my nails are often dirty from teasing the urban landscape into producing nutritious food. I enjoy engaging urban children and adults as they marvel at the seed-to-food process. And now, if the Rona gets me, I'll go empty, knowing that I've done my duty in the generational transfer of earth wisdom. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
That was community producer Amope Carter DeBoyku for West Dayton Stories. There are more COVID commentaries and stories to come, so keep listening. Our theme music was written and performed by Dayton's own Mariah J. I'm Project Director Jocelyn Robinson.
West Dayton Stories is supported by Citywide Development Corporation. For more information on this project, visit wyso.org. Reentry Stories is our series about formerly incarcerated citizens in Ohio. Today we hear from Afton McLean. Series producer Mary Evans introduces us.
Returned citizen Afton McLean is an entrepreneur and owner of Afton's Beauty Pod in Dayton. She's been out of prison for 3 years and recently voted for the first time in her life for the candidate in the 2020 presidential election.
What was it like returning to the same city that you're from?
It was extremely hard because, of course, a felony is going to follow you everywhere. So just getting out, trying to get a place to live, getting a job, everything was hard. Nobody wants to hire you for real. Nobody wants to give you a place because they're so focused on your felony and not knowing if you change. So it was hard.
And I think the irony of it is you came out looking for employment, doing all these things, and you ultimately ended up being a recruiter and actually helping people get jobs. So how did that all come about, and what was the most rewarding thing you think in taking that job?
Originally went back to one of my old jobs, and a lady who was coming in and just visiting the place, she asked me had I ever done anything besides warehouse work, and I told her no. She told me that I would be a great candidate to work with her mother, that she just liked my presence. She liked how I interact with people. So when I got to the building, I found out that I would actually be the person that would be talking to people, talking to them about their felonies, placing them with jobs, and actually helping them to overcome their fear at interviews. I was at that job for 6 months, and I decided that I actually wanted to go back to what I know, which was the warehouse business.
You became a mother for the first time. How's that been?
Best feeling ever. Did not think that I can have kids, like, at all. I dealt with the pressures of people making fun of me because I didn't have kids. It was a blessing.
Let's talk about 2020. This was my first time voting since being a returned citizen. How was it for you? Was this your first time voting?
Yes, it was my first time voting. Never thought about it before. Didn't actually think that it would affect me. So this time around, it affected me because coming home, there were so many changes that I didn't understand, which got me into the politics. Just watching the election, just watching the debates, I had to actually sit down and do my own research and figure out if me voting would be the right thing. And ultimately, I was one of the people out there telling people that they need to vote.
How do you feel about your decision now?
I feel good about my decision. I felt like that my vote actually counted, and I'm glad I made that decision.
And so now you're starting up your own business. Why did you decide to start your own business?
Well, first, like, I'm a very big supporter of the local businesses and things like that. So I had to ask myself, like, I wonder if I can do this and would I get that same support? I'm big on lip gloss. I love hair. I love lashes. So I'm like, well, maybe if I learn how to make my own stuff, then I will see how that go. I did a trial run. I told my husband, like, this is something that I want to do. He asked me, did I really want to quit my job? I said, I'm quitting my job. I'm putting my money into this and I'm going to take it from there. I walked out my job. I never looked back, and I opened up my beauty pod February 14th.
Ultimately, you think you made the right decision?
I believe I made the right decision because the fact that I am a felon, it stops me from working in a lot of places.
So what are the future goals of Afton's Beauty Pod? Where do you see it in the next 5 years?
Oh, the next 5 years, I plan to have a whole nother store somewhere. Right now, I'm on the east side, and I'm starting off small in a little industrial area, but I see myself, like, branching off.
That was Afton McLean. She plans to open Afton's Beauty Pod February 14th, 2021. For Reentry Stories, I'm Mary Evans.
Reentry Stories features conversations with formerly incarcerated people in Ohio. This project is also a podcast and comes from the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices. You can hear all the stories in this series and see photos of the participants at wyso.org. I'm Jerry Kenney. That's it for this edition of WYSO Weekend on WYSO. Thanks for joining us this holiday weekend. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 10. Now on WISO, it's Vic McCunis with the Book Nook.